Vanguard Radio for the precious 8%.
This is from a child, tomatoes on the vine, and onions. I love winners when they cry, losers when they try, music when it's good, and life. And I love you too.
We want to bring in some callers. So if you're out there listening to us and you have Skype, you can request, if you can, by way of the instant messaging, that you want to be brought in as a caller, and then we'll accept you as a caller. And that goes for anybody that is out there. It doesn't have to be someone, you know, from the VNN forum who's a member of the forum. It can be anybody out there. And I've welcomed anybody to come onto the show and either refute what we've said or add to it. You're definitely welcome. I do want to say this, though, that if you're going to call in and you have a point to make, make your point and then let us respond to it. We're going to be democratic about it as far as the callers calling in, but this is a dictatorship. If you call in and, you know, there's no ideas being thrown around, if you're just going to spout rhetoric, you're immediately going to be cut off. Okay, so with that said, if you do want to call in on the show, the word, it's VNN Broadcasting is the call sign.
Actually, so it's VNN, all one word. VNN Free Talk Live.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's on the blog and on the forum thread.
VNN Free Talk Live. So if you want to call in and make a point, definitely we're looking for callers to call in. Brian, one thing that we were talking about during the break was that when Catholicism came about in the 4th century, mm-hmm. what happened was is that... the Romans were trying to get everybody on board as far as religion goes. They found out that, look, we can't have the Jews over here, the Christians over here, and the pagans over here, because if we do, we're not going to be able to tax all these people. And that was one of the big strengths of the Roman Empire, was that they were able to tax everyone, and if they didn't pay the taxes, they were beaten into submission until they did. Mm-hmm. So finally, when the Catholics came about, it was actually a blend of Christianity and Judaism and paganism in order to appease everyone. But then is that Martin Luther broke off from that because he didn't agree with the Catholics, and that's basically where the Protestant church comes out of. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly well known, the points that he disputed. He didn't like the giving of condolences, people paying money to get their dead relatives out of purgatory or whatever stuff they made up about that. There were people paying money, believing that the money that they paid to the Catholic Church would get their dead relatives out of this thing called purgatory. He was against that. He didn't recognize the Pope. When you look at it, I mean, there's, relative to what we have, the diversity of Christian sects that we have now, which is what I call them, non-denominations, it's not one religion, it's countless religions, it's many religions, it's a massive confusion, the way I see it. But, you know, compared to what we have now with the diversity of Christian denominations, it was pretty, you know, not too many issues that broke him away. And then others broke away from that and broke away from that. And then others broke away from Catholicism in their own direction. And I think if you take any religion, even the ones that are really far, even the ones that seem so far removed from the Catholicism, like the Romans and like the Mormons, which you might know more about with your family background, and the Jehovah's Witnesses, which I know something about. I had friends that were like that. And the Seventh-day Adventists, they seem to be more far removed from the Catholic influence. But you can still trace it right back. When the Jehovah's Witnesses started, they were still reading the King James Bible. They believed in Christmas, which was a holiday handed down by the Holy Roman Catholic Church. So it still started with that. It all branched off from that. It traces right back to Catholicism. It's all Catholicism when you really boil it down, in my money. You can't criticize your own mother. And all these denominations came out of it, is the way I see it. It came out of 4th century Catholicism, not the original, not the Christianity that existed in the first three centuries.
Well, it's really remarkable, really, that this thing called Christendom lasted so long. I mean, think about it. Christendom lasted from about 400 AD to 1500 AD. And
yeah.
And you know, as a religious political unity pretty much of Europe. I mean, obviously not all of Europe was Christian at that 400 AD, but you know, this thing called Christendom really held up quite a long time under the Catholics.
Well, they still loosely refer to all Christian denominations collectively as Christendom even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some use that term that way.
Well, it's interesting to note whenever you're watching a news program, especially like Fox News, or if you have to, you know, I don't suggest anybody do, but if you are listening to like Rush Limbaugh, they tend to throw around this term. The term is Judeo-Christianity or Judeo-Christians. And I challenge people like Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh to actually go down to the Wailing Wall where all these Jews are praying and they're bobbing up and down with their hats on. To tell one of those Jews that you, as a Gentile Christian, are exactly the same as they are. And under Christ, there's no difference in between the two. And when Christ comes back for the second coming, you're going to be able to worship at the throne of Jesus just like anybody else. And my point is, if you do that, more than likely, as a Christian, you'll get stoned to death. And there's many times that Christians have gone to Israel, and they have been stoned by militant Israelis. And these are things that the American news media just overlooks altogether. And but Christians, just like Khrushchev said, there's a famous quote when, you know, everybody knows when he got up and on the podium and started slamming his shoe. But another quote that he said was, "You can spit in the face of the Americans and they think it's do. Like D-E-W, do, like the like on the grass in the morning." And I think Khrushchev was a Jew, and I think that's the typical attitude that most Jews have among people that are non-Jewish, is that you can take advantage of them, and that Jews should take advantage of Christians because they are put there for the benefit of Jews, not as an equal to Jews.
Yeah, well, that kind of arrogance that the Jews have had, it's Jewish pride. It's like, they're like saying that Americans don't have the kind of pride in being American as the Jews have in being a Jew. They have a huge amount of Jewish pride, and I think that's what's caused maybe a lot of the persecution against them, you know, even dating back to the Roman times. They're God's people, you know. They go around, and I'm not even questioning it. I mean, honestly, if someone says they're God's people, whatever. I mean, but then making that statement, other people might say, "Well, then who are you trying to say I am? What am I? What am I?" Piece, you know. So, I think that Jewish pride might have caused a lot of that havoc that they received.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what's so amazing is that before the break we were talking that, you know, if James, the brother of Christ, you just think about the historical possibilities. If he had been more persuasive. Or if the Apostle Paul, a converted Jew, had not come along, Christianity probably would have just stayed some weird Jewish sect and died out.
Yeah, it could have. Yeah, that's a very thing. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, Paul, most of all, was the most dynamic and never met Christ in person, was considered apostle, but wasn't one of the 12. He was a devout Jew who was very active in imprisoning Christians. Was very against the movement, and became a Christian in a very unusual sort of way. Of course, after the death of Christ, so he never met him in person. But actually, became more dynamic in his ministry work than any of the 12 who walked with him for those 3.5 years, and really reached a lot of the. You know, so-called Gentile nations.
Yeah, and what's also amazing about this all is, you know, this confluence of events. Weren't the Gospels, even the original Gospels, there's the original Gospels, the four, weren't they written in Greek?
Well, the book of Mark was written in Hebrew.
Okay.
And I guess he was trying to reach the Hebrews with the gospel. But they were written in Greek, people got to remember, because Greek was the common language of the people of that whole area. A lot of people think that it must have been Latin because of the Roman occupation, but Latin at that time was really only spoken in political circles and in judicial circles and people, but the common people really spoke Greek. That was the most common language. You can read something interesting in the Gospel of John, because Pilate, again, taking that neutral position of only crucifying Christ out of the Jews' insistence and to avoid their rioting over it, he actually posted the sign above Jesus' head that stated, "This is Jesus the Nazarene, the King of the Jews." And instead he put it in three languages, in Latin, or in Aramaic, Greek, and Latin, and it stated that he put it in those languages so that all would be able to read it. Because all the people of that region spoke either one of those three languages, but Greek was the most prevalent, and that's the reason. Paul, especially being, Paul was a Roman citizen. Paul had Roman citizenship because his father was Roman, and he actually used that because he wanted to avoid being tried by the Jews when the Jews were coming against him. He was being smart and used his political position as a Roman citizen to actually choose to be tried by Caesar instead, and we don't even know how that story ended according to the scriptures either, what became of Paul.
Unbelievable.
I wanted to comment on something Todd said a minute ago, too, about the Christians, or the term Judeo-Christian, and how in the scenario of a Christian walking up to the Wailing Wall.
Go ahead.
Please do.
I don't know what the term I didn't think the term Judeo-Christian meant anything more than the Christian religion having Judaic origin, being that Christ was a Jew and his apostles. I don't know about that term or what it carries, but I don't believe there's any Christians that really feel that the Jews are the same as they are in regards to salvation in their mind. I haven't met any Christians that feel that way. I've met Christians that think that because the Jews are God's chosen people, which I really don't know. I haven't exhausted my studies on that according to Scripture. I did bring up the points earlier that Jesus discredited their lineage and stated that the fact that they have a bloodline means nothing. If all the truth of the matter lied in that, then of course having Jewish lineage wouldn't mean anything according to Christ if the whole point lied on that.
Go ahead.
But the thing is that I've heard Christians say that because they're supposedly God's chosen people, that somehow they will come around to salvation, or they will be given a chance to accept Christ at a later date, and they feel a kinship with them because they were his chosen people, the people that their Savior came for out of, and they feel a kinship with them in that regard. I think that whole kinship is ridiculous based on points I've already made before. However, I don't think that they really think that Jews are the same as they are.
Well, this goes back to something called dispensationalism or the New Covenant. And so you're pretty firm in your and I also agree with you this, by the way, in your understanding of Christ's mission, that he was saying to the Jews that there is a new covenant. And what bound God to the Jews before Jesus Christ, the arrival of Jesus Christ, was the Jewish laws. And then Christ came along, and you're saying that Christ meant this. Tell me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Christ came along and said, hey, all this stuff about the Jews being a special people is now pretty much defunct. And it is defunct. And
yeah.
that you all have no claim to being next to God.
Yeah, he said it in very, very plain and damaging language. He told them straight to their face they were children of the devil,
mm-hmm.
and that they were not children of Abraham.
Now, this is very interesting because this goes really to where we're at right now with these Christian Zionists. Now, aren't the Christian Zionists, aren't they really saying that the covenant, the new covenant that Jesus brought in, is itself wrong, and that there's something that you know that they're stressing the relationship between Jews and God, whereas Christ did not. And in fact, the modern Christians are in fact kind of revoking this new covenant, the new covenant that Christ himself brought on earth, right?
Well, the thing is that you got two opposing teams. You got Christ and all those that follow him, and then you have the so-called Jews, like that particular person. Todd had sent me a post from a thread where a guy was posting on the white nationalist movement subject relating to that and calling them so-called Jews. I love that term, so-called Jews, because exactly, the so-called Jews, you have Christ, you have two opposing teams, Christ and those that believe what he said, and he was redefining what a Jew should really be, and then you have the ones that killed him who were certainly not of him. Now, you got who's the real Jews? I mean, you got Jesus claiming he's the king of the Jews. Those that crucified him certainly weren't his people. So it begs the question, at what point then what became a Jew? When Jesus stood there and told them that their family line means nothing and you are a Jew only if you behave like Abraham behaved, he made other statements along that line too. When he saw people of great faith that were not Jews and that were living in outer places that demonstrated great faith in him, he said more than once, "I tell you the truth, that many will come east and west and sit down with me at some proclaimed event that's supposed to take place in Christian belief, that Christ will return and sit down with him. He said, many will come from east and west and sit down with me, but the children of the kingdom, meaning the descendants of Abraham, will burn in the lake, will be in outer darkness." He made many claims many things like that. So it really begs the question, of course, the Jews discredited Christ. He discredited them. You have two opposing teams. Who are the real Jews now? Are the Jews the way Christ defined what a Jew is? Or is a Jew the way they continue to try and define it in their position? That's really the interesting question about the whole thing.
Now, let me ask you this. When the Romans destroyed the temple and the Sadducees became defunct, was it the Pharisees that had written the Talmud after that?
No, the Talmud came as a result of the Babylonian captivity. There was two Babylonian captivities, and they got their nation back again for the third time when Christ came on the scene. They had already seen two captivities. They had been turned over to the Babylonians twice, and in one of the Babylonian captivities, when they were not living in their nation, I think the Talmud was formed. So the third time was the final time when there was no more chance. When Israel was destroyed by Rome, their nation was destroyed and taken completely then. Not a captivity that was given a period of time where the nation would be given back to them, but a complete destruction. And the prophecy that the nation will be given back to them, which is a prophecy, will not, in my mind, it ties in with everything I'm saying, will not be given back to them, not the seed of Abraham, not the descendants, but given back to those who are of the new covenant, as Christ states it. And the terms Jew in the New Testament, the term the New Jerusalem and the new nation of Israel, is not the nation of Israel in a political sense or as a bloodline of Abraham, in my view, is not.
Yeah, because
as far as the Sadducees, by the way, were already off the scene by the time the Romans destroyed the Jerusalem. The Pharisees were the only surviving sect up to that point.
And because there cannot be an Israel because of Christ.
Yeah, it'll be a so-called Israel under him.
See, this is what's so funny is that you know, I've stated my position on Christianity, and what's so funny is that because of Christ there can't be an Israel, and Christ basically just destroyed all Jews, the Jews' claim to being, you know, having some sort of special relationship anymore.
Yeah.
And destroyed their entire heritage.
Yep.
And yet now you see these Christians making a fetish of the Jews, and well, you know, you have to wonder if this isn't something that's been planned and managed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thing is that and to me the fact that they have a fetish for the Jews, the fact that this favoring of the Jews, if you will, whatever word you want to use, the fact that it seems to come out of the idea that they feel that the established nation of Israel that was established in a political Israel, a politically established nation of Israel, supposedly which are the seed of Abraham, which I'm claiming doesn't mean anything anyway, number one. Number two, they can't even prove that they are. And you have a political nation that was established. The fact that their liking of the Jews or that their kinship to the Jews is based off of their belief that that is fulfilled prophecy, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. They've been duped worse on that point than any other. To me, they're missing the mark as to the events that are about to take place, in my mind. They got their eyes on Israel. They got their eyes on the complete wrong thing. If anything, it serves as an illusion to trick them, and they're looking for the wrong thing.
Well, as you look at the movement today, the Christian movement, and you know the visible Christian movement, do you see the leaders of these movements as nothing more than agents of Israel, or what?
No, I don't look at like I said a minute ago. I don't really see the Christian connection to the Jews as being that strong. I see the connection between the United States government and
okay.
the Israeli government. I mean, it's obvious the allies. I mean, the guy that used to be the Prime Minister of Israel got on the, I think it was a TV show. I think it was, I don't know what it was. He was commenting on, he was talking about how it's such a great thing that Israel has become a nation because, so that, he was really discussing the fact that the Jews have to redefine themselves now that they're no longer, now that they have a nation, and now that they've become a political power, and now that they have the ability to defend themselves. He's talking about how they need to redefine, the world needs to redefine now the way the Jews are looked at because they have their own nation. And he was making this such obvious connection to the American government, using terms that George Bush would love to use, like good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
Actually said, in word verbatim, that America knows the difference and knows who the good guys and the bad guys are. That, to me, is so pathetic. Good guys and bad guys. Give me a break. Give me a break, good guys and bad guys. I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that at all, good guys and bad guys. But the connection there politically to the United States government and the nation of Israel is clear. But Christians talking about the Jews in some affectionate way, it doesn't hold much power. It's based off of their belief that the forming of the nation of Israel was a fulfillment of prophecy, and it's just part of their religion, which is just, it's just a joke to me anyway, and that's one of the biggest, it's kind of one of the biggest humorous things I find, their liking of the Jews.
Well, let me ask you a speculative, sorry about this, Todd, let me ask you a speculative question then. Do you see, this is what we all wonder actually, do you see someone like George Bush as someone who's just manipulating a certain religious sentiment within the country that has arrived on hand for whatever reason, or do you see him as a person who actually believes the Bible and believes this stuff about Jews? And this is speculative, so what's your take on this?
Well, he seemed to me like he seems to be easing off on his connection to the Christian thing now.
Okay.
I don't know if he wants to avoid looking like a complete idiot. Now he's going to... I mean, you know, he was real heavy on the Christian thing in the beginning, and I think that people would agree that now he's not hitting that so hard. But the way he came across in the beginning was very much like what I hear a lot of the so-called Christians that I know personally around here. And all of the Christians, all of the so-called Christians that I know were also huge supporters of Bush. So that in itself shows how he's... Yeah, was it a deliberate attempt to appease them, to appeal to their religious position? No doubt. And President Bush, by the way, here's the thing. I don't know. I don't really follow politics. I won't criticize President Bush. I won't talk about his policies and why we went to Israel. I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the conspiracy things. And I know it's very plausible things about the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. I mean, I know it's... I'm a big fan, I'm a big believer in, if you think there's a conspiracy, there probably was. Why the World Trade Center came down, I'm familiar with all that.
Okay.
But basically, President Bush, to me, is just the worst sales job in the history of the planet. Like, what I mean by that is, leaving anything political out, I'm not criticizing why he should be in Iraq, not in Iraq, nothing like that. Just taking the guy, judging by his appearance and his body language, the way he comes across. Probably any politician, it's a sales pitch, it's a sales pitch. You know, maybe Bill Clinton, you know, he gave us a sales pitch, they're all giving us a sales pitch. Question is it a good sales pitch? I appreciate a good sales pitch from someone who's going to sell me a vacuum cleaner, I'll buy it. I'm like, good job, you didn't talk to me like I was an idiot. President Bush is the worst sales pitch ever. He's not even convincing. The only thing that comes from his body language is that I feel like a complete idiot up here. I have no idea what I'm saying. Somebody please help me. And I've never really seen him come across with any conviction, anything that seemed like it was meaningful from him. He's just trying to repeat what he's told to say and can't even do that.
Absolutely.
That's my take on that, you know what I mean? It's not a political position. It's just my ability to assess the character of someone that I see speaking. You know, what the heck? People can get up in arms about all they want.
I bring this up a lot to people that when you had the debate on national television between Bush and Kerry, someone in the audience said, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently that you were going to reinstate the draft. Is there any clout to that? And Bush said, you know what, I'm glad you brought that up because I've seen a lot of discussion about that on the internet. And he was using the term internets in a plural sense,
yeah.
As if there's more than one. I mean, how much can you really insult your audience other than saying, yeah, I've seen talk about that on the internet. So come on.
There's so many of those clips. They're endless.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. It's like when he says, somebody asked him, they says, why isn't the CIA looking for bin Laden? He just ignores that one and says, yes, they are, when actually there's no unit in the CIA that's looking for bin, there's no special task force that's looking for bin Laden anymore. Also, someone asked him, they said, why is it that for 4 years now, 5 years, you've been looking for bin Laden and you can't find him? And he says, well, because he's hiding.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. He's very unconvincing. I think it's so obvious that people are operating behind the scenes of Bush. Like when George Tenet, who was the director of the CIA at the time, he basically sold Powell and Bush on the idea of weapons of mass destruction. And told them just some huge whoppers, like Saddam Hussein had acquired plutonium from Nigeria, of all places. And
Now Tenet's a swarthy little fat boy, short
yes.
fat boy, but he I've heard he's not a Jew. I don't know if he's a Jew or not.
Well, let me just say this about swarthy people. When you take into account, like, you look at the Jewish mafia, the Italian mafia, and how a lot of these other swarthy people operated, you know, it's like the Jews dupe the Italian mafia a lot. Why? Because they're swarthy and they're stupid. And they
right.
have some kind of, I guess they feel some kind of racial kinship to each other. I don't know what Tenet's racial background is, but I know that he was in the thick of trying to convince Powell and Bush and Rumsfeld that there was weapons of mass destruction. Now, I also know that before September 11th happened, that there was a huge amount of talk about the United States going into Colombia to attack Colombia and once and for all end the drug war. Now, whether that's, you know, something that is benevolent for the United States or not, I don't think it is, but the fact of the matter is that as soon as September 11th happened, we forgot all about that. And we attacked Afghanistan. The world was behind us on that. I don't think it was a good thing. I think that was a snow job to the United States, too, when the leader of the Taliban got up. He could barely speak English at all. And, you know, you've got the press, you know, talking to him and asking him, are you going to work with us? Are you going to cooperate with us? And they took what he said out of context, and as soon as it happened, boom, the United States attacked him. And then all of a sudden, you've got that going on, and then that's when the whole weapons of mass destruction thing started. We've got to attack Saddam. We've got to attack Saddam. Once and for all, let's get rid of Saddam and get rid of Iraq. Well, what most Americans don't understand is that since shock and awe happened, is that there's been... You there?
Yeah,
Ryan?
I'm here. I thought that was a funny name for the campaign.
Well, yeah, shock and awe was the huge... it was the term given right when the United States attacked Iran in 2003. It was like, look, this is shock and awe. and this is what's going on. They attacked him. Since then, since that, when the United States attacked Iraq, yeah, there's been 2,000 soldiers that have been killed, but the whole thesis behind the attack was we have to turn Iraq into a democracy and make it safe for Iraqi citizens that have nothing to do about the political process. But the fact of the matter is there's been over 665,000 Iraqis killed since 2003 in this campaign to democratize Iraq. And, you know, you have to look at it and say, well, wait a minute, is this what democracy is about? And why is it happening? And why was there such a huge push for the United States to go into Iraq when obviously Iraq had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction or with Al-Qaeda either? So that's what we're looking at. What does this really have to do with? And from my viewpoint, it doesn't have anything to do with oil because, you know, the price of oil has gone up since then. It's not like we nuked their ass and took the gas. The price of oil has gone up. You know, so I think it all boils down to religion. And it goes back to the point I wanted to make, was that is Israel trying to colonize the whole Middle East for a religious reason? And the only thing I can come up with is that, well, obviously they're doing something over there. And what does it have to do with the temple? Obviously the Jews want to build a temple. And they're trying to build a temple, get ready to build a temple for the second coming of Christ. Is that going to happen in our lifetime, Brian? I mean, what do you say about the temple?
Well, I don't know. I will say that the idea that there's a religious reason behind that is probably, as hideous as it sounds, probably plausible, because that's yet another prophecy, the building of the temple. They're all being duped because they don't in my view, they just don't understand the symbolism. They're looking at these things as fulfilled prophecies, and they're completely distracted from what's really going to take place. The temple that they're talking about, the Israel that they got their eyes on, is not the thing that's happening. That's my take on that. It's highly plausible that there's religious reasons behind it.
Well, you know, as I look at all this stuff about the temple and the rapture and all this whole milieu that you get today, one, it makes good television, and two, I read it as some sort of like weird science fiction story, and the reason why I say that is because, you know, it plays well, it has a certain dramatic tension to it, and I think. I think the people who really, you know, don't read much and who don't think much about the world, these sort of stories, they go a long way towards forming a world view. And, you know, that's what's so dangerous about this. Alex Linder says that, you know, Jews are masters of the literary myth. And you know, maybe the Greeks might do pretty well too, but
yeah.
But anyway, you know, I mean, you know, they you know, I you know, I don't know. It seems to all sound like some weird science fiction plot to me.
I do see a lot of it as like a science fiction plot. It's funny you said that. I see a lot of that myself. I have some viewpoints on that connect the two.
Well, share them to it. Share them with us.
Well, it's like, this might be off topic, but when you mentioned science fiction and how the whole thing, I mean, I know Todd has beliefs about extraterrestrial. Everyone might have their own personal position on UFOs, extraterrestrial.
Yep, the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah,
I believe in UFOs.
Yeah, my personal opinion is that, you know, even the prophets, even Nostradamus or whoever you had way back when, predicting that the world would become one power and that there would be a one world government. It's almost like if you follow the logical progression of ideas, you have, you know, if you did it all the way back to caveman times, you had maybe, if you believe in that, you had one tribe that learned how to sharpen their rocks and the other one still used them dull. And then they kept building bigger weapons to outdo the next guy. You know, the warfare that took place in World War I was less technological than World War II. We developed aircraft at one point. leading all the way up to nuclear bombs, to the point where we can't do nation against nation anymore. If we do, we're going to destroy ourselves. So out of necessity, there's got to be some force that is there, someone in the background that wants to say, it almost seems like a noble effort that, well, we're going to try and figure out a way where we can get the world all under one power, all under one roof, so to speak, to prevent from destroying ourselves. And when you mentioned about science fiction and the whole propaganda about UFOs and spacemen, which I personally don't believe, like a lot of any astrology professor or, I mean, astronomy professor, I mean, and physics professor, I'd be in agreement with them on this, that I don't believe if they're out there, they've never been here. I don't believe it. I believe it's propaganda. When you look at the War of the Worlds, you know, War of the Worlds, look at the way people reacted to that. They jumped off buildings. They were thinking that, oh, my God, the aliens are here. Now, if you go out and talk to the average person, it would be like second nature. And I think that it's been the media that's done that. The science fiction you're talking about, it seems like, it's kind of vague to me, but it seems like this whole thing is leading up to this, almost like that movie Independence Day, where they're going to dupe the world into thinking we're being attacked by somebody out there as a reason to put the world all under, like they've always done. You know, you got to, if there's not a real enemy attack, like people have said about the World Trade Center, create one. Create a precedence to do it. Yeah. And it's almost like there needs to be a precedence that, now we're being attacked from space. Now we have to resolve our differences. We got to become one world. And maybe to give the world a reason to be, you know, to become one under one world government. I've kind of always thought something like that.
Well, you know? let me ask you this: with your reading of the New Testament and so forth, I mean, do you believe that Jews are the predominant driver of this climate of one world government?
I don't know. I mean, that's something where that's you guys' area. You would probably have a lot more to say, but I have no knowledge. I don't have a lot of knowledge. Like, the thing is that Todd has told me before about, you know, the way that the Jews and the media affect my life as a person, as a white male in this country. I mean, you know, there may be things going on that supposedly affect me that I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time being, I'm gonna go after the targets that are affecting me in ways that I do know about, that are grinding my nerves, and those are the Christians, and a lot of this rhetoric and all of this. I feel like I'm walking into a zoo of monkeys that are flinging crap at me when I deal with all of these denominations and doctrines and blah 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 made up crap. Those are the people that get on my nerves. If other groups of people that Todd has mentioned are causing problems, they're not causing problems to me that I know of.
Well, how do you encounter Christians? I mean, I see them here. I'm in the Bible Belt, and I see them with their stupid bumper stickers on their cars, and some of them scrawl writing all over their cars too. You know, Jesus is coming, and all this kind of stuff, but you know, I don't get in too many conversations with them. How do you rub up against these people, or do you rub up against these people?
I do. It's actually a very good question. The thing is because of my interest in the Bible, my knowledge of the Bible, and my belief in the Bible. Now, here's the thing. When I come on a program like this, and what I really want my message to be in general is, I don't want my message to be that of building up anything, of promoting religion, even a religion. I would like my religious belief, if I even have any, to be besides the point, because my position really is, my interest is to really tear down. What I really want to do is destroy. I really want to expose and to destroy the falseness of Christians. So when I say I do have a religious belief, I'm kind of stepping out on a limb to say that I do. I do have a knowledge of the Bible and belief, and it maybe gives me a morbid curiosity about the whole thing. It makes me want to believe that there's something in the Christians that is truthful. And so I have, for years, went to a church locally here, but I'm never a church person. I'm never able to really, I think for myself. I'm an independent thinker. I think for myself, and I actually know the scriptures, and this is what's really given me the disgust for the movement. The fact that I've gone inside, I've been the inside man, and I've gotten negative treatment from these people. So it's a very good question. if I had stayed clear of them, like you're saying, then you're right. I've almost asked for it myself. I'm almost like they're not coming to my door, but they irritate me so much that I almost have gone to them and actually engaged and frank try to engage in frank discussions, debate. And the reactions that I get and the sickness that I see bothers me so much that I want to be active. I want to be active. I actually want to go out of my way to expose these people.
Where do Christians today pick up most of their ideas about Christianity? Is it from their pastors or their priests? I don't think the Catholics are as bad as the Protestants are today, but that's just another issue. But do they pick it up from the TV or where are they picking up this stuff?
Well, they pick it up, like you said, from their pastors or wherever. They believe what they hear is the basic thing, and they believe what they hear. They believe what they hear once they decide so and so is a credible source, and they totally love the fact that they can just. Oh, well, they can blame it all on whoever told them. Since Pastor Bob, they decide that he's a man of God, so to speak, or whatever, and once they decide on his credibility, they believe whatever he says. They believe what they hear. They don't believe what they read. They can't read for themselves. They can't think for themselves. Unfortunately, I guess a lot of people are just have a herd mentality and want to feel like they just want to feel like they're under the instruction of a leader, and they just follow these people. I think whatever they say, yeah, I think that's what it is. They believe their pastors.
Well, you know, something about Christianity, and I've read a lot about the medieval church, and the medieval church at times could be quite, if I'll use the term today we have now, anti-Semitic. And, you know, it could go through periods where, it would stress the crucifixion of Christ at the hands of Jews, and it could go through periods where it would defend the peasantry from Jewish predation, money lending, and so forth like that, and it would rebuke the princes and the kings for being under the influence of Jews, and you know, of course. And you mentioned the Crusaders; they actually slaughtered a lot of Jews when they went over there too.
But anyway, that's another whole issue.
But what my point is that Christianity has gone through other phases in its history where it has become very, very harsh on Jews. And do you see any sort of chance that the Christian mentality might change in the coming decades and reverse itself and because of the excesses of our time?
And then turn back to be more anti-Semitic instead of this kinship with the Jews that we see?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't see it as that. I see it as a building. I think it just seems like this Christian movement that seems to be growing is very much connected to their belief in Israel.
Yeah.
Formed as a nation, being a fulfilled prophecy, and like Todd said, something to do with the building of the temple. It seems like there's a connection that they're following along with this course, and they're following along the wrong. I think they couldn't be more duped. I don't see it as turning around. I don't know. I don't see it as that huge, though, either. It's just a part of their religious belief, just like a lot of things, like the Trinity. It's just another one of them stupid things, you know. It's just Christmas. I mean, I don't know. It just fits in the category to me with all those other things that they say.
I think that's mainly how Jews are able to escape from any type of criticism, is that they're just a part of the Bible, just like anything else, just like Christmas, just like the Trinity, just like this and that, and the Christians don't question what's going on. I think the main reason they don't question what's going on is because of the Jewish control in news and entertainment media. Christians aren't being shown what Jews do. They aren't being shown, you know, about the amount of people that they're killing in the Middle East. They think that the invasion of Iraq is something that was prophesied because of Nostradamus. But if you actually read Nostradamus, it's the most inaccurate type of prophecy that anyone could ever read. And it's left up to the interpretation of the people who are reporting to you, well, Nostradamus talked about the Twin Towers being attacked. No, that's not actually the case. well, Nostradamus talked about Hitler. Well, no, not really. It's his prophecies are so vague that you have to be a Christian moron to take him literally and say, well, yep, he was a prophet and he was prophesying basically what Christ had also talked about, which is not true at all. So, yeah, I think that's the main thing, is that Christians aren't—they're not investigating what's going on. They have their head in the sand. They're not—they don't look at what happens as far as news events go. And that's the problem that we're having as far as like one world government, is that we're getting to the point now in this country where, you know, I've been real big on what's recently happened with the Military Commissions Act of 2006, which is H.R. 6166, and it says basically that if you're arrested after the president signs this bill, that if you're arrested and labeled an enemy combatant or actually a political dissident, you have no habeas corpus. You have no right to go before a court and ask, hey, why was I arrested? What am I doing in jail? What am I being charged with? When is my court date going to be? Do I have the right to plea guilty or not guilty? All that stuff goes right out the window. And the reason it goes right out the window is because what's happening is that if you look at the economy right now, and if you go forward, you know, 5 or 10 years, it's the Jews are going to do one of two things. They're going to manufacture a situation where there has to be martial law in the United States, or they're going to double the money supply again, like they did, like Greenspan did, with putting money in everybody's pockets by way of reducing the interest rate down. Well, the interest rate is back up, and now you've got, you know, people defaulting on their loans, which is going to create, you know, a huge seller's buyer's market. So what are the Jews going to do? They have one of two things. They can either outlaw dissent, like they did in Russia under Alexander Solzhenitsyn's time, or they can put more money back into the people's pockets. But I think it's going to get to the point where if they increase the money supply again, it's going to create inflation. The dollar's going to drop. Gold's going to go up. And you're not going to have anarchy, you know, all over the country, but there's going to be a lot of political dissidents that are put in jail, and people aren't going to be able to speak out. And I think this is at any time in history where the Christians need to wake up and say, look, all this is because of Jewish interests, not because of American interests. You know, George Bush didn't go over to Iraq because of American interests or Afghanistan. None of this stuff is for American interests. And what's amazing is that in no time in history did you have people like that were mainstream news commentators that are coming out and saying, look, this is horrible. What's going on? Lou Dobbs says America doesn't exist anymore because of the North American Union Treaty, because of the NAFTA highway, because of letting all these immigrants into the country, because of this, you know, they've talked about building a fence, but actually if you read the documentation behind building a fence, it's just to appease the neocons, and part of that documentation says it's actually going to be a virtual fence. So there's no actual fence that's going to be built. They're not going to stop the Mexicans from coming in the country and devaluing the dollar. They're not going to stop, you know, they're not going to bring the troops back, you know, from Iraq. It's just going to be a continual cascade until the United States becomes a third world country. So, and that's what I always go back, that's the problem, is that when the United States does become a third world country, all the resources that the military has are going to be sold out to the highest bidder in lieu of keeping the economy propped up. And if that's the case, then you're going to have people like Israel, China, Korea, Russia, they're going to be on equal footing with the United States, whereas right now they're not, but I think Iraq is being used not only to strengthen Israel because it kills one of their regional enemies, but it also makes the United States weaker. And that's one of the main goals of the communists 100 years ago when they had their meetings with Weishaupt and Marx, was that, look, they want to weaken the United States. How do we weaken the United States? And that was talked about quite extensively. And one of the things is, I think, is to use up the military resources so that the United States becomes weaker. So, and that's what's happening. If the United States becomes weak and we're not a first world country anymore, and we're not on an equal or greater standing of other countries that have nukes. We're in some serious problems.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and close out this hour, and we'll and there is one thing I want to ask over the break and think about in regards to Brian. And don't answer this. We'll hold the listeners over on the break on this question. We'll take a short break and play a couple songs. One of them is I see the Old Testament and the New Testament as so radically different from each other that I don't even understand how they can be contained in the same book called the Bible. And anyway, let's go ahead and take a 5-minute break, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's see here.
You're listening to Vanguard Radio.